To slow the spread of the virus, we need to press pause again. That's why once more, we need...
Welcome to Legalese, a broadcast about law cast broadly. Bienvenue à Legalese, une émission consacrée aux droits qui vise à en rendre le jargon plus accessible, tout en évaluant de manière critique ces institutions. I'm Michelle, your host for this month's edition of Legalese. Today we'll hear from Russ Diable with the Truth Campaign. He's part of a network of Indigenous activists, including Defenders of the Land and Idle No More. Diable is critical of a federal bill that is supposed to implement the United Nations Declarations of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, also called by its acronym UNDRIP. On December 3rd, Bill C-15 was introduced into the Canadian House of Commons. Many people have called for UNDRIP to be implemented in Canada since it was adopted by the UN in 2007. One private member's bill by Romeo Saganash made it until the Senate, where Conservative senators voted against it. Russ Diable says the bill is not good enough. I spoke to him earlier this week to learn more.
Okay, my name is Russ Diable. I'm a member of the Mohawk Nation at Ganawagi. I'm a policy analyst, and I produce an online newsletter called the First Nations Strategic Bulletin, which deals with political and legal issues affecting First Nations.
And one of your most recent, newsletters, and you've tweeted about this, you've written about this, is about the new bill C-15, which would implement and do other things, UNDRIP, which is the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People in Canada, which hasn't been done before. But I guess if you could just start with explaining, you know, how have we got to this point? 2020 is when the bill was introduced into the House, but the declaration itself is decades old by this point.
Well, the first thing we should know is that the version of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples that the United Nations General Assembly adopted by resolution in 2007 is actually a third version. There was a first version developed in the 1990s with Indigenous peoples from around the world. That version was changed within the UN system through the Human Rights Commission. They did a redraft and came up with draft two. And there was a draft three through the Human Rights Council, I believe it was called then, in 2007 with some last minute additions, including adding Article 46, which basically says, Article 46 of the UN Declaration basically says that, the Declaration can't be interpreted to challenge state sovereignty or territorial integrity. Of course, in Canada, Canada's sovereignty and territorial integrity, or the Crown's sovereignty and territorial integrity, is based on the doctrine of discovery. And I would argue in Quebec it was terra nullius. So the Supreme Court said in the 2014 Chilcotin decision that terra nullius never existed in Canada, but that the radical underlying title belongs to the Crown. And they're basing that basically on the Royal Proclamation of 1763, but it's still the doctrine of discovery. And that was added at the last minute with no Indigenous input. So that's the version that the UN has adopted. And when it was adopted, the only countries that voted against it, there were four of them, was Canada, the United States, New Zealand, and Australia. All countries who have, British common law traditions and also have Indigenous peoples living within those states. And since then, those four have come on board to say they endorse the UN Declaration. Like in the case of Canada, it was under Prime Minister Stephen Harper's government in 2010. He said it was an aspirational document and they would recognize it that way. But it had to be consistent with Canada's laws and constitution. And when the Trudeau government was elected in 2015, as part of their election platform, they promised to implement the UN Declaration, as well as the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's call to actions. When then Minister of Indigenous Affairs, Carolyn Bennett, went to the United Nations in 2016, she said that Canada was going to fully endorse the UN Declaration in accordance with the Canadian Constitution. So right away, there was a qualification. Because instead of looking at international law and international customary law and recognizing that the minimum standards in the UN Declaration are part of international customary law, they instead came up with a Canadian definition of the UN Declaration, which, you know, is now being imposed through this Bill C-15, the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples Act, that was introduced into Parliament on December 3rd. You know, we should also know that the process to develop, you know, Bill, what is now Bill C-15, went through a very manufactured consent process. The Department of Justice selectively engaged, as they call it, certain First Nations or Indigenous groups, the provinces, and corporations, or, you know, associations representing corporations. And that was a 6-week process prior to introducing the bill into Parliament. So it was a very rushed process. The rights holders, which are the Indigenous peoples in the communities and nations, were bypassed, as been, you know, the practice of the Trudeau government. And they, you know, basically during the middle of a pandemic introduced this bill on a major issue that should be discussed and should have had, you know, joint development in such legislation. But really, it's only the federally funded organizations, Indigenous organizations, that that they really involved in the process. So that's where we're at with this bill being introduced. Now we know the text of it. We had seen a draft version that they had proposed during their six-week engagement process. But now we see, you know, what they're actually proposing. And a group of us from different Indigenous networks have done an analysis. Some of our team includes lawyers with constitutional and international law experience. But we have this collective analysis that we've produced. And that analysis, you know, shows that we cannot support Bill C-15, not only with the bogus process in developing it before it was introduced into Parliament, but the content of the bill itself. We call it CANDRIP, not UNDRIP, because, again, it's a Canadian version or definition of the UN Declaration. And the first thing in Bill C-15 is the title. You know, that indicates the intent of the legislation. The title is the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples Act. And if they intended to implement the UN Declaration like they promised, they would have said the you know, the UNDRIP Adoption Act or the UNDRIP you know, Approval Act or something like that, but it doesn't say that. And when you go through Bill C-15, you know, the one of the main concerns we have is Section 2, because Section 2 is using the Constitution Act 1982 to define who Indigenous peoples are, and Section 35(2). You know, the definition of Aboriginal peoples in Canada under Section 35. And then also they're saying on the rights of Indigenous peoples, they're saying their rights that are recognized and affirmed under Section 35 of the Constitution. Well, the problem we have with that is that Section 35 of the Constitution, when it was introduced, you know, back in 1982 and 1983, had a Section 37 process. And Section 37 said that the Prime Minister, within 1 year of the Constitution Act 1982 becoming law, had to hold a First Minister's Conference on Aboriginal Matters to identify and define the meaning of Aboriginal treaty rights in Section 35 of the Constitution. And there was a First Minister's Conference held in 1983 where that Constitution Act 1982 was amended. They amended it to create a new category of treaties based on land claims and settlement agreements, such as the James Bay Agreement. And they also said that it was all laws would be guaranteed equally to men and women because of the concerns at the time about gender discrimination in the Indian Act, removing status from Indian women who married non-status people. But they put it in the Constitution. And along with that, there was a schedule to hold three more First Minister's Conferences on Aboriginal Matters. But they came up with a list of agenda items. So it was no longer explicitly to, you know, identify and define what Aboriginal treaty rights were in the Constitution. Because it was supposed to be a political agreement. That's what the Section 37 process was. But those talks ended in failure in 1987. The government moved on to Quebec's distinct society status and sidelined Aboriginal issues. And the political agreement, you know, on the meaning of Aboriginal treaty rights was basically tossed aside. Until 1992, you know, Brian Mulroney, there was no longer a Section 37 constitutional requirement to hold First Minister's conferences to include national Indigenous organizations. But he did it for political reasons to try and cobble together a constitutional package that would include recognition of the inherent right to self-government, an elected Senate, a distinct society status for Quebec. And as we know, there was a national referendum held and that Charlottetown Accord, as it was called, was rejected by Canadians. So that ended the constitutional reform process in Canada for the foreseeable future anyway. And that's what Bill C-15 is based on. It's instead of saying that Section 35 of the Constitution should respect international law, it's flipping the law, their interpretation of the UN Declaration to say that the UN Declaration has to conform to Section 35 of the Constitution, which for the last 30-some years has been defined by the Supreme Court of Canada instead of a political agreement of Indigenous representative organizations. And what the Supreme Court has done is they've laid legal tests. They placed the burden of proof on Indigenous groups who are asserting that they have Section 35 rights. And starting with the Sparrow decision in 1990, where they said that, you know, Aboriginal and treaty rights are not absolute. They can be justifiably infringed for valid legislative reasons. Right there, they started to circumscribe, you know, what Aboriginal treaty rights in Section 35 means. And then they went on and added other decisions like the Vanderpeet test that said, if you assert you have Section 35, you know, it has to be a custom practice or tradition you did prior to contact with Europeans, and it has to have survived contact. And that's a very high threshold to meet under colonialism. And, you know, like I said, the Chilcotin decision said that the ultimate title belongs to the Crown, not Aboriginal title, which, you know, we know as people from Indigenous nations, it's the Crown title that's a burden on our title, not the other way around. But they reverse it. And those 30 years of Supreme Court decisions laying out these legal tests and principles are being entrenched in Bill C-15, rather than recognizing, for example, Article 3 of the UN Declaration talks about Indigenous peoples. It recognizes that Indigenous peoples have the right of self-determination. And of course, we know there's international covenants, like the civil and political covenant that all peoples have the right to self-determination. Same with the education, social, cultural covenant. It also says that all peoples have the right to self-determination. So the way we see the UN Declaration is Article 3 is the most important article in the UN Declaration because it links the right of self-determination to indigenous peoples. And, you know, if Bill C-15 passes, that article will be interpreted through domestic law and policy. And Canada already has this 1995 so-called inherent right policy that Jean Chrétien imposed, you know, without any meaningful consultation. And that policy still remains in place today. That's the umbrella policy in all negotiations and discussions with the Indigenous peoples across Canada. And it basically isn't anything but inherent right policy because it lays out what's on the table and what's not on the table. There's preconditions to negotiations. And it also makes clear in that self-government policy that that there is no right in any international sense. So, I mean, already they've circumscribed that, self-determination under the Canadian definition of UNDRIP will be self-government as defined by the federal government. And that means they're not recognizing any internal sovereignty or, you know, shared sovereignty at all. It's Crown sovereignty, and they expect Indigenous peoples to submit to Crown sovereignty and territorial integrity through self-government agreements, what they call modern treaties, or to get out of the Indian Act, there's other federal legislation like the First Nations Land Management Act, the First Nations Fiscal Management Act, which are also federal laws. But, you know, that's what the government's saying is if you want out of the Indian Act, you know, you either have to sign an agreement based on their one-sided policies, or you accept, you know, this First Nations legislation. Which is still under federal domination and control. So that's what Bill C-15 entrenches, is the domestic policy and legislative framework that the government of Canada has been imposing to interpret Section 35 over the past, 30 years. And this is what we object to, because, practically speaking, I've spoken with lawyers and they all tell me you cannot domesticate international law. But as I respond to them, because I'm a policy analyst, not a lawyer, my response is, well, you certainly can, undermine the right of self-determination to the point where groups will not be able to afford to go over to the United Nations, to Geneva, to the human rights bodies to make complaints and to sustain them. It will make it very difficult. Not only that, by entering into these agreements, you're accepting Canada's definition of self-determination. Like if you go into legislation, for example, the Indigenous Child and Family Services Act, you're accepting the fact that there's federal jurisdiction over child and family services, because that's what the law lays out, even though they say they recognize, the inherent right of Indigenous peoples to develop their own child and family services. There's no money attached to that. So it's really a hollow promise. So what the Trudeau government's been very good at is a communication strategy based on symbolism and not substance. And Bill C-15 is really the culmination of their 5 years of manipulating what they call reconciliation and nation to nation. And so what we're trying to do is explain to the grassroots people, because obviously, the leadership is supporting this. For example, at the Assembly of First Nations, they had a virtual assembly at the beginning of December. There was one resolution on C-15, which was to give conditional support, conditional based on getting fundamental changes or amendments to the bill. The Assembly of First Nations manipulated the process so that that resolution would not hit the floor for debate amongst the chiefs. And that gives the Assembly of First Nations National Chief the ability to use previous resolutions before the text of C-15 was known to say that he has a mandate to support Bill C-15. And he said he's not running again for re-election next year, and he's going to spend the next 6 months basically helping to get Bill C-15 get royal assent. And there are other groups. Most of the groups, I would say, who are supporting Bill C-15, indigenous groups, are groups that have signed modern treaties or are negotiating under those policies. So in our view, they really have nothing to lose. It's the indigenous communities and nations who never agreed to the land claims policies of the government or the self-government policy and, you know, have refused to negotiate under them, you know, who have a lot to lose with Bill C-15 if it gets passed, imposing that, you know, domestic law interpretation of the UN Declaration. So that's what we're doing, is we're launching a campaign to the grassroots to encourage them to get mobilized to put pressure on the government to withdraw that bill. And, it, you know, people ask me, well, what about Romeo Saganash's Bill 262? You know, my response is, well, first of all, that was a private member's bill. This is a government bill. That's different. But personally, I never did support Romeo Saganash's bill either. I mean, the James Bay Agreement, you know, they entered into that in 1975. They pretty much defined through subsequent agreements their Section 35 rights. So, you know, they don't really have anything to lose. And that's the same with other groups who signed modern treaties, in my opinion. Like I say, it's the ones who have unresolved Aboriginal treaty rights. Those are the ones that have a lot to lose if Bill C-15 passes, because that will become they'll be using the UN Declaration as cover for doing what they've been doing for the last 5 years, or even longer, really, which is to remove the legal distinctions between Indians and Canadians. And that goes back to a 1969 white paper on Indian policy. Pierre Trudeau and Jean Chrétien. So that's why we say it's CANDRIP, not UNDRIP, Bill C-15.
That was Russ Diebel, a policy analyst. He was speaking about why a bill to implement the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People falls short. We'll hear the rest of that interview coming up. First, we're going to go to a song. Here is Kaylee Cardinal with When All Is Said and Done. Thank you. You're listening to Legalese on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Michelle. The Indigenous Activist Network is campaigning for an amended bill to implement UNDRIP in Canada. Here is part two of my interview with Russ Diabo of the Truth Campaign. And I mean, it's hard to look at this bill without looking at the entire history. And, you know, the Minister of Justice has said that this bill is supposed to address or undo somehow the colonial history of Canada. From what I'm hearing you saying, this is not the bill to do that. But I guess how could we do this, given, you know, the constitutional legal structure and political structure that Canada is operating in? How can the federal government actually implement UNDRIP?
Well, I agree with you. I think ultimately it's going to take a constitutional amendment, as was envisioned by the Constitution Act 1982, Section 37 process. Section 35 is unfinished business as far as I'm concerned. But they could have jointly developed legislation with wording that would have interpreted, Canadian law to conform to international law and to recognize the right of self-determination and the territorial rights that go with that and the right of free, prior, informed consent. Because the Trudeau government is clearly not doing that. They haven't respected free, prior, informed consent, or FPIC as it's called, right from the beginning. They've been relying on the Supreme Court of Canada's HIDTA test about the Crown's duty to consult and accommodate. And, you know, it all, like I said, it's all based on the burden of proof on Indigenous groups. If there's a project or activity on a territory of an Indigenous group, then they have to respond, the Indigenous group has to respond to the provincial governments mainly, that the project or activity will negatively impact on their Aboriginal or treaty rights. And so any information they submit forward on asserting their rights has to go through what's called a strength of claim analysis, which is based on, you know, basically from the weakest to the strongest evidence. If they can show that they're likely to have Aboriginal title, which is the strongest evidence or potential title, then, you know, the government has to start talking about stopping the project or amending the project or some way accommodating the group. And then on top of that, after the strength of claim analysis is a depth of consultation analysis, you know, which goes into that. Do they actually have to accommodate, or can they just give a notice to say they're doing this because they're not legally required to change anything? So, I mean, this is the whole framework that groups are dealing with, and the government could have said that they were going to respect the international minimum standards within Canadian law, within the laws of Canada. And certainly, you know, the federal government can only cover its areas. But as we've seen with the BC government, which you know, passed Bill 41 last November, over a year ago, they did a top-down approach there too, the same way the Trudeau government's doing it. The Trudeau government seems to be copying the BC government. What the BC government did was they consulted with an Indigenous leadership council, but there's 203 bands in BC. So they took this top-down approach, and the leadership council represents the main political organizations in BC, the Indigenous ones. But, you know, they didn't talk to the people on the ground who the courts have said have the rights. So the rights holders were totally excluded from that process. And I'm sure a lot of the members of those bands in BC still don't even know the implications of bills, you know, 41 that passed in BC, which they called DRIPA, the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples Act. And we can see that the interpretation of that law in BC, which passed in November of you know, 2019, in January, February of 2020, the BC government supported the RCMP going in and forcibly removing the Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs from their territory and their guests. And so they invaded and removed them from their own territory. And even Article 10 of the UN Declaration says that, you know, you can't forcibly remove Indigenous peoples from their territory. But when Premier Horgan was asked, well, what about this Bill 41? He said, well, it's forward-looking, it's not retrospective. So, you know, it shows you that in BC, as it will be in Canada, is that the federal government has, you know, the BC government has a dominant role in that case to interpret how the UN Declaration may or may not affect their laws and policies in British Columbia. And like the federal version in BC, they have to develop an action plan and they have to review, you know, the laws and that to see if they have to change any to conform to Bill 41. But the situation in BC is that probably about 2/3 of the bands are in what's called a BC Treaty Commission process, where they're negotiating under a policy where you're agreeing to basically surrender to the Crown sovereignty and title and get your rights replaced with new rights under these modern treaties. There's about 60 bands in BC who don't agree with that and haven't, you know, entered the process. But most of the bands in BC have. So you see what I mean? Like there's policies and laws that are used to define the UN Declaration in such a way that it doesn't change anything. It entrenches the status quo. And Canada's bill will do the same thing. The self-government and land claims policies. Like I said, Article 3 on self-determination, they'll use their self-government policy. And Article 26, it talks about the restoration of lands, territories, and resources Indigenous peoples have traditionally used. And Article 27, talking about a process to adjudicate the land rights. And Article 28, talking about, you know, where lands aren't restored, there should be restitution either through monetary means or equal quantity of lands. Those will all be interpreted through the land claims policies. All 46 articles of the UN Declaration will be interpreted through a framework, that domestic framework that Canada already has to interpret Section 35 that they've developed. And so in terms of decolonization, the intent of the UN Declaration about setting international minimum standards to move beyond the colonialism that state governments have imposed, Bill C-15 cuts that off. So the way to do it is to start over, talk to all 630 bands and their members in a process, which will probably take longer. But when you're talking about a fundamental relationship with the Crown governments or the Canadian state for future generations, you know, on international standards, as you know, comprehensive as the 46 articles in the UN Declaration, it requires the right approach. And ramming it through bypassing the rights holders during a pandemic and trying to rush it through Parliament before everybody starts to look at it is the wrong approach. It's going to lead to further conflict, I think, in Canada.
I wonder if, as you said, these organizations that Canada is negotiating with in these committee-type settings, the nation-to-nation, the AFN, the Métis Council, the Inuit Tapperis, that Anatomy, they support the bill. You've talked about the motion at the AFN recent assembly that was tabled or set aside. But if they were to say, you know, the risk of not passing Bill C-15 is that nothing gets passed at all, what would you say to that if this is an argument that, you know, better than nothing?
I don't agree with that. I think that a bad law, no law is better than a bad law passing. And, you know, the thing is, the Trudeau government, even though they say they're taking a distinctions-based approach on Indigenous policy, they're not. It's a pan-Indigenous approach. And the thing is that First Nations have rights that are different in a fact situation that is different than the Métis and the Inuit. I mean, let's take the Inuit, for example. They for the most part, have settled under the comprehensive claims policy, land claims policy. They've settled their land claims in northern Quebec as part of the James Bay agreement. Out in Labrador, they've settled out there, or they're negotiating to settle, I think, a few groups. And none of it. They went for a territory. Their land claim up in Nunavut was settled. And they went for a public form of government. They didn't go for self-government like First Nations are demanding. And the Métis, well, I understand, you know, the Métis will, they're very happy with the Trudeau government recognizing, you know, that they have Section 35 rights and negotiating with them. So the Métis are certainly happy because prior to this, none of the federal governments have really recognized that they have any significant rights. There will be issues with that between Métis and First Nations, but like I said, First Nations, you know, can document the history of their colonialism, you know, basically band by band, how the Indian Act has impacted them and how their territories were overtaken by the provinces. And the reserve system was set up, you know, to deny them, basically to force them into underdevelopment and poverty in perpetuity, particularly the ones who the locations of the reserves were far away from transportation networks. You know, they're only fly-in communities, depending on ice roads and things like that now. So, you know, I think for First Nations have the most to lose compared to the Inuit, who really don't have much to lose because they've settled most of their issues through the self-government. Well, they didn't go for self-government, through public government and through settling their land claims. So, you know, I think from First Nations point of view, if they only wanted to apply to the Métis or to the Inuit, then I think they should go for that. But they shouldn't include the First Nations in that until there's a proper process developed to get First Nations involvement in developing legislation with wording that's acceptable. But right now, C-15 is a deceptive bill based on a manufactured process where they're trying to manufacture consent through that 6-week engagement process with select groups. And right now, you know, there's 6 premiers, conservative premiers, I should say, who also are opposing Bill C-15. But they're focusing on the free prior informed consent. They're concerned about it being a veto and affecting resource extraction. But what we're looking at is our right of self-determination, our international right of self-determination, being undermined by this bill. And the other standards in the UN Declaration regarding land rights and free, prior, informed consent, which are all based on our right of self-determination. If we didn't have that, there would be no FPIC or any land rights, because it goes back to our sovereignty pre-existing the Crown. And we haven't surrendered that. And, you know, that's what Section 35 was supposed to do. Even now, they've been interpreting Section 35 through policy, not legislation. But this will elevate their policies into law if Bill C-15 passes. You know, the framework they've been using for negotiations and discussions, that inherent right policy, so-called. So I recognize the Métis and the Inuit have their interests, but I would say that they're very different than ours. Our history is different, our fact situation is different, our legal status is different, and you know, there should be separate schedules for negotiating that, not lumping everybody together under the umbrella of Indigenous peoples, or Aboriginal peoples for that matter.
And you mentioned this before, the raids in BC after the BC bill was adopted and the response from the Premier there. You know, when we talk about some of the jurisprudence that has interpreted Section 35 and the limits that it kind of has placed in adopting this Canadian-centric framework of how we see rights and title, can a declaration, you know, whether in its current form or in a better form, you know, persuade the courts that those interpretations are not legal or not sound anymore? Or, you know, would it change the outcome of those disputes?
Well, you know, like I said, we have lawyers on our team who have looked at Bill C-15. And for example, the measures to make laws consistent with the declaration, that's Section 4, I think it is. You know, their opinion is that no court's going to rule on, you know, whether Parliament has to pass legislation consistent with the UN Declaration based on that article of the bill. And they certainly couldn't tell them what measures to take according to the wording of that article of the bill. I mean, there's problems putting the preamble aside because it's not legally binding. If you look at sections 1 through 7, there's problems with all the sections, starting with the title of the bill. Like I said, the title of the bill calls it the UN, the UNDRIP Act, but it doesn't say the, you know, later on in the bill, it talks about the affirmation of UNDRIP. It doesn't say the endorsement or the approval, you know, of UNDRIP. So it's clear the intent is not to implement the UN Declaration through Bill C-15. And again, they're using Section 35 as the framework for interpreting how they're going to implement the 46 articles. And that's all based on the doctrine of discovery, like I said. And even the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples from 1996, their first recommendation was the Crown governments, the courts, need to stop relying on the racist, outdated doctrines of discovery and terra nullius. They have in the preamble, in Bill C-15, removing all doctrines of superiority in that, but there's nothing in the actual body of, you know, sections 1 through 7 of the bill that says they repudiate the doctrine of discovery. If they did that, that would go a long ways to addressing the concerns that we have about interpreting and applying Section 35 common law. And even in Quebec, you know, Quebec is basically stolen territory, because when the Royal Proclamation was issued, you know, by the time they had Confederation in 1867, Quebec was handing out land without any treaties, Indigenous lands. And, you know, that was not consistent with the law. You know, in the British the British system of law at the time, the British colonial system. And, you know, that has led to, you know, the provincial government, for example, denying Indigenous peoples even to get reserves set aside for them, because they didn't want to have what they call valuable timberlands set aside for reserves, for example, within the Algonquin Nation. Right now, there's three Algonquin communities headquartered in Quebec, because their territory is both in what is now Ontario and Quebec. There's three communities headquartered in Quebec that don't have reserve status because, you know, Quebec obstructed it. And I believe there's at least one Mi'kmaq community in the Gaspé who are in the same boat. And even Bill C-92, the Indigenous Child and Family Services Act, Premier Legault has got his government going to court to stop federal spending power in areas of child and family services going to Indigenous communities. He's trying to block any federal spending power coming in areas of provincial jurisdiction. And they certainly aren't talking about, you know, passing a law to implement the UN Declaration. You know, BC is the only government, provincial government in Canada that has done that. And even the way they've done it, you know, through a top-down process, they ignored the rights holders too. And they're going to interpret that law in favor of the provincial government. So like I said, you got six conservative premiers opposing Bill C-15. For reasons I don't agree with, but, you know, it again goes back to the rushed process that the Trudeau government used in trying to get this bill into Parliament. Why? Because they made a promise in their 2019 election platform that they would introduce legislation to implement the UN Declaration in 2020. And they said that in their 2020 throne speech. So based on the promise that they made that they would do that, they've gone through a rushed process. Rather than starting to talk about it last year, you know, after the election, they only started 6 weeks before they introduced it. And I would argue that was a deliberate move on their part to do a rushed process to get it introduced, to say they fulfilled their promise. And I know their Romeo Saganash has said, you know, on Twitter and that he doesn't believe the bill is going to make it through Parliament because he thinks an election will be called before it makes it through. That may or may not be the case, but I don't think we should operate on the assumption that you know, Parliament may dissolve and the law may dissolve. I think the process was flawed, the content of the bill is flawed, and I think we have to mobilize our people to stop it, because it's wrong the way the Trudeau government has been manipulating, you know, the processes, policy and law processes, trying to say that they're jointly developed by relying on, you know, the national Indigenous organizations, which, by the way, for the last 5 years, the Trudeau government has used those national Indigenous organizations to consult from the top down in secretive processes. And with each of the national Indigenous organizations, First Nations, Métis, and Inuit, they've developed what they call bilateral mechanisms, which is a fancy way of saying, you know, Indigenous cabinet subcommittees. One for AFN, one for the Métis Nation, Canada, and one for the Inuit Tepers of Kanatani. But basically, the Trudeau government controls the funding, the pen, and the agenda in those processes. And so they point to the media and to the public and say, we jointly developed this law, or we jointly developed this policy, but they've completely bypassed Indigenous peoples on the ground. And, you know, this is another example of that, this Bill C-15.
Mm-hmm. And so you did talk about this going forward, you're campaigning against the bill. I'm just wondering how you will maintain, you know, the messages that you're putting forward when at the same time, as you said, the, you know, conservative leaders are also against the bill, but for very different reasons. How will you go forward with this this campaign?
Well, you know, the other thing is that, you know, there was the Mikisew decision of the Supreme Court that said that the Crown doesn't have to consult on legislation. You know, so Parliament, right? But arguably, the cabinet and the cabinet ministers, the Prime Minister, do have to still consult. They still have the duty to consult on them. So I think we need to go after them and pressure them, but also to pressure the parties and the party leaders. I think the NDP are going to support the Liberals on this, quite frankly, because Romeo Saganash's bill, right? He was an NDP member. They supported that bill. I think Jagmeet Singh and his caucus will support this one. Leah Gazan, an NDP member, has already said publicly she supports it. And I suspect that there'll be other MPs, basically the NDP caucus will support it. Because they also have links to the BC government, right? BC NDP. And, you know, two of the members of the cabinet of the Horgan government, after the election now, recently left the NDP federal caucus. And now they're ministers in the Horgan government. You know, Nathan Cullen and Murray Rankin. Murray Rankin is the Minister for Indigenous Relations, I think, for the government of BC. And they were both involved in the Wet'suwet'en negotiations as well. So there's a strong linkage between the BC NDP government and the federal NDP caucus. So, you know, with the NDP propping up the minority Liberal government, I expect them to support this bill, to support, you know, the establishment organizations that are saying that they support. But that's why we're focusing on the grassroots to get the information to them, to get them to make their chief and councils aware that they don't agree. So, you know, that's going to be part of our campaign, is focusing on the grassroots to talk to their chief and councils and to the chief's organizations that are supporting this. But not only that, but what we're doing is we're encouraging, you know, Indigenous communities and nations to develop their own self-determination plans. Because the court has laid the burden of proof on us, we need to collect our historical and cultural information. We need to, you know, to have a research process, a mapping process to map out our territories and who's on them. And we need to come up with self-determination plans to start challenging the provincial and federal governments and corporations operating on our territories. You know, for our future generations, based on international law, not just Section 35 of the Constitution. That's the way forward that I see it. Because that's what the UN Declaration says. There should be a restoration of lands, territories, and resources that have been traditionally used and occupied, or restitution, you know, either monetary or quantitative replacement lands. And I think that's the basis of self-determination, is expanding the reserve land base to at least recognizing there's a broader interest in the territories beyond the reserve boundaries. You know, basically, why can't Indigenous title be recognized, for example, underlying all of Quebec? They certainly didn't recognize it as they developed as a province. And even today, their government successive Quebec governments have tried to deny rights. And I don't know why, well, I probably do know why, but I think Quebec chiefs should look at going international, exposing Quebec and what they're doing, because their so-called sovereignty project is dependent on whether Indigenous peoples agree or not, because they don't have territory that they could separate from Canada with. That's Indigenous lands. But that's something for the future.
Thank you so much for coming on the show and for talking about this. It will, you know, we'll be staying tuned to see what happens as it goes to committee, and the bill is still continues to be discussed. And I will also be following the work that you're doing. Thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
That was Russ Diabo, a policy analyst with the Truth Campaign. That's it for our show this month. Thanks for listening, and thanks to everyone who contributed. You can listen to Legalese every second Friday of the month from 11 a.m. to 12 noon on CKUT 90.3 FM. Find us on Facebook at Legalese on CKUT.
woman of Labrador. Children round your cabin door, wondering when your daddy will be home. Well, he's gone on his trapping line. It seems like a long, long time since he's waved his last farewell and left you alone. Woman of Labrador, turn your mind to daily chore, hunting and catching fish just to feed your family. Yeah, and then at night when they're all in bed, you go outside just to raise your head and watch the northern lights go dancing high in the sea. Daughters of Labrador, those days are here no more. You wonder if your babies will ever understand. Yeah, all the hardships that you endured when everyone that you knew was poor, sharing everything you had and living on the door, children round your cabin door, wondering when daddy will be home. Well, he's gone on his trapping line. It seems like a long, long time since he's waved his last farewell and left you alone, alone, alone,
If you made a compensation claim for abuse at an Indian residential school, the records of your claim are secure. They will be destroyed in September 2027 unless you choose to keep them or share them. To learn more, call toll-free 1-877-635-2648 or go to myrecordsmychoice.ca.
Pour limiter la propagation du virus, le Québec doit se remettre sur pause. C'est pourquoi, à nouveau, nous devons rester à la maison et éviter les déplacements non essentiels. Les rassemblements sont interdits en zone rouge, à éviter en zone orange, et il faut continuer de respecter les mesures sanitaires de base. Pour freiner le virus, remettons-nous sur pause. Informez-vous sur québec.ca/coronavirus. On continue de bien se protéger. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Sound.
C. K. K.
U.
T. T. 90.3 FM.
Another reliable.